Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I think it's text 2, Ron. Yeah, right? Chapter 8. Yeah. Okay. Soham nirnam shula sukaya dukam. Soham nirnam shula sukaya dukam. Mahad gatanam viramayatasya. Mahad gatanam viramayatasya. Pravartaye bhagavatam puranam. Pravartaye bhagavatam puranam. Yadaha sakshad bhagavan rishibhya. Yaaha sakshad bhagavan rishibhya. Soham nirnam shula sukaya dukam. Mahad gatanam viramaya tasya. Pravartaye bhagavatam puranam. Yadaha sakshad bhagavan rishibhya. Go. Anybody else? Any other? Vaishnavis. Thank you. sa that aham I niranam of the human being shula very little sukaya for happiness dukam distress mahat great gatanam entered into viramaya for mitigation tasya his pravartaye in the beginning bhagavatam Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Vedic supplement yat which aha said sakshad directly Bhagavan the personality of Godhead Rishibhya unto the sages. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. This is Maitreya speaking now. Let me now begin speaking on the Bhagavat Purana, which was directly spoken to the great sages by the personality of Godhead for the benefit of those who are entangled in extreme miseries for the sake of very little pleasure. Purport. The sage Maitreya proposed to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam because it was especially compiled and traditionally comes down in the disciplic succession for the solution of all the problems of human society. Only one who is fortunate can have the opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of pure devotees of the Lord. Under the spell of material energy, the living entities are entrapped in the bondage of many difficulties simply for the sake of a little bit of material happiness. They engage in fruitive activities, not knowing the implications. Under the false impression that the body is the self, the living entities foolishly relate to so many false attachments. They think they can engage with materialistic paraphernalia forever. This gross misconception of life is so strong that a person suffers continually, life after life, under the external energy of the Lord. If one comes in contact with the book Bhagavatam, as well as with the devotee Bhagavat, who knows what the Bhagavatam is, then such a fortunate man gets out of the material entanglement. Therefore, Sri Maitreya Muni, out of compassion for the suffering men in the world, proposes to speak on the Srimad Bhagavatam first and last. Om Gina Timaram Dasya Janam Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Melitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayamrupa Kadamayam Vidati Swaparantikam. So as I mentioned, this is Maitreya Muni speaking to Vidura. And he's saying, let me now begin speaking on the Bhagavat Purana. So here we are. We're in the third canto, chapter 8. And this is text 2. And Maitreya Muni is saying that he's now going to begin speaking on the Bhagavat Purana. So what have we been listening to for the last three cantos, 8 chapters and 1 text? And she's saying here, I'm going to begin speaking on the Bhagavat Purana. I thought that's what we were hearing up till this point. Right, exactly, but not from him. So the point is that just like Bhagavatam is more than just a book, right? Bhagavatam is more than just a specific set of stories and instructions. It's a principle, right? Bhagavatam, just like guru, sometimes you hear the expression, guru is one. That means that it's not just one person, is the guru. And somebody who's disseminating the teachings, that's a guru. It's a principle. So in the same way, there's a principle underlying this concept of what is Bhagavatam. Prabhupada elaborated upon that very nicely once in the questions and answers to a class he was giving in San Francisco. I don't want to mess around with my reference here to check, but it's not right in front of me, but he was asked a question at the end of the class by a person. He said, is there anyone similar to Joan of Arc in the Srimad Bhagavatam? And Prabhupada, and then she continued. Prabhupada went, hmm? And the lady goes, are you familiar with Joan of Arc? She was a saint. Prabhupada, yes. And the woman goes, is there any person in the Srimad Bhagavatam similar to her? Prabhupada said, you want to see Joan of Arc in the Srimad Bhagavatam? And then he said, why do you take Joan of Arc out of the Srimad Bhagavatam? Any activities of devotees, that is Srimad Bhagavatam. What do you mean by Bhagavatam? Then he says, Bhagavatam derives from Bhagavan. The word comes from Bhagavan. And he goes, the word is Bhagavat, pertaining to the Bhagavat. Pertaining to Bhagavan means it's the Bhagavatam. You know, it's narrations, instructions pertaining to Bhagavan, that's Bhagavat. So Bhagavat can be expanded to unlimited. Prabhupada says Bhagavatam can be expanded to unlimited. And here's the principle now. He says anything in relationship with God, that is Bhagavatam. So if Joan of Arc, if she was in relationship with God, she is also Bhagavatam. You should expand Bhagavatam in that way. See? So this is Bhagavatam. What Maitreya Muni here is going to be speaking to Vidura, that's the Bhagavatam. There's no contradiction. It's not like, wait a second, if he's speaking the Bhagavatam, what are we hearing? No, that's also Bhagavatam. There's different lines. And you know, to elaborate upon this point about the teachings, like for instance, the Bhagavatam is coming down in different lines. This Maitreya Muni here is saying to Vidura, I'm going to now speak the Bhagavatam. And he, as it was spoken to great sages by the personality of Godhead, in the subsequent means after, coming up verses, the coming up verses, that's going to be explained that he's referring to the four Kumaras. The four Kumaras, they once were curious and they traveled down from the upper planetary systems by the Ganges River, and they went to where Sankarshan was, Lord Sankarshan, in the bottom of the universe, and they inquired from him, and they heard the Bhagavatam from him. And then the four Kumaras, they in turn instructed Sankhyana Muni, what they had heard from Lord Sankarshan. And Sankhyana Muni, he instructed Parashara Muni and Brihaspati. And Maitreya Muni, he heard from Parashara. So he's in that line of the disciplic succession. That's the Kumara Sampradaya. There's four major Sampradayas. Kumara Sampradaya is one of them, and that it starts with Lord Sankarshan. There's one where Lord Shiva is the Sampradaya Acharya. I guess, but what expansion of Krishna does Lord Shiva hear from? I can't remember. And Lakshmi, she's also the head of a Sampradaya. And of course, Lord Brahma, he's the head of our Sampradaya. And we back in the second canto, he received the Bhagavatam. It was referred to as the Bhagavatam. It was only a few verses at that point, but he received that from Krishna. So those are the four major Sampradayas. So the Bhagavatam is coming down, and the teachings are coming down in these different lines is the point I'm trying to make. And there are other lines even. Because in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Imam Vishvashvate Yogam Proktavanaham Avyam Vivishwan Manave Prahur Imam Ikshvakave Brivit. Manor Ikshvakave Brivit. So what line is that in? Which one of those four lines is that in? It's not in one of those four lines. It's another line. So it's another line of disciplic succession. Krishna spoke it to the sun god. The sun god spoke it to Ikshvaku, right? Ikshvaku spoke it to Manu, like that. It's another line. And a couple of verses, well, the next verse he says, how's it go? What's the next verse after that? Evam parampara param, yeah, praptam, imam rajarsha uvidu, sakaleneha mahata yogo nashta parantapa. So then he goes on to explain. So he's speaking to Arjuna, And he's saying, but you know what? That chain that I just told you about, that was broken. That got broken. And then he goes, Sa'evayam maya tedya, yoga prokta puratana. How's it go? Bhakto sikhe sikhashachi, vihashyam etar. He explains that because you're my devotee and my friend, I'm going to start another one with you. So here's two more. There's the one like Krishna speaks to the sun god, and because that got broken, Krishna's now speaking to Arjuna. And Arjuna, if you look, is not in our... I was in a conversation with Yudhakarma last night. He made the comment, Arjuna's not in our disciplic succession. But that means he's not... I mean, he isn't in the sense that it's the same teachings, the same philosophy, the same Siddhanta. But yeah, he's in a different line. That line... You know, Krishna started when speaking the Bhagavad Gita there. So the point is that Bhagavatam is broad and it's meant to be, as Prabhupada said, expanded unlimitedly. It's understood. Bhagavatam is the glorification of the Lord and his pure devotees, the glorification of the transcendental character, the name, fame, character, and activities of the Lord and his pure devotees. That's the Bhagavatam. So Bhagavatam is living. Bhagavatam is dynamic. Bhagavatam is still going on today. The activities of pure devotees, say for instance in the Krishna consciousness movement, that's also in a sense Bhagavatam. So we're meant to participate in the Bhagavatam. You know, we're meant to come to that platform of, you know, pure devotional service and participate in the Bhagavatam by performing glorious transcendental activities in the service of the Lord. So anyway, so that's an attempt at my sharing some realization about the Bhagavatam. It goes on to say here in this purport, only one who is... Oh yeah, and the purpose of the Bhagavatam, stated directly here in the purport by Prabhupada, says... The purpose of the Bhagavatam is the solution of all the problems of human society. That's the purpose of the Bhagavatam. It's meant to solve all the problems of human society. And Prabhupada goes on to say that only one who is fortunate can have the opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of pure devotees of the Lord. So, we're fortunate. We're fortunate that we're hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam from Srila Prabhupada, you know, who is a certified pure devotee of the Lord, and not everybody gets that opportunity, so we should be very grateful that we have that opportunity and also very eager to try to share it with other people. It says, under the spell of material energy, the living entities are entrapped in the bondage of many difficulties simply for the sake of a little bit of material happiness. Reminds me of that a phrase from an essay by Alexander Pope. He wrote this essay on man, and he very simply said, hope springs eternal from the human breast, meaning that's the driving force behind this whole thing, you know, that people are always hoping, like in the Bhagavatam says, hope against hope. They're hoping that somehow or another we're going to become happy through material sense gratification. Yeah, and they labor, it says here, they experience a lot of difficulties for a little bit of material happiness. And sometimes they don't even get the little bit of material happiness. But as it goes on to say, it's under the spell. Oh, no, it already said it. It's under the spell of material energy. It's a spell. It's a spell. Yeah. Even people with their intelligence can see this is not making sense. You know, I'm working so hard for so little, but they can't help it. Avritam gyanam itena kamarupena kunteya duspadena dalenacha. I missed the line there, but it explains how lust is never satisfied and it burns like fire. It's a spell. The living entity, the conditioned soul is under the spell of Maya. And it's like the donkey, you know, with the carrot in front of him put a carrot at the end of a stick, and the guy who's riding on the donkey has another stick in his hand, and the donkey is just under the spell. You know, he keeps moving forward, thinking he's going to get the carrot, but he doesn't get the carrot because it's on the stick. It's that much in front of him, and if at some point he gets a little bit intelligent, and he starts thinking to himself, "I'm not going to get that carrot. I'll just take. Let me just forget about it." Whap, whap. You know, the master just beats him with the stick. So let me go after the carrot again. So the conditioned soul is in that kind of a situation. They're going after this material happiness, thinking it's going to. And then when they get a bit disillusioned because they get very frustrated and, you know, just it's just not. Then they whack. The material Maya is just there to whack them. And then they go, let me go after it again. You see? So that's the unfortunate position of the conditioned souls in the material world. So this is. What's the solution? Well, in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Tesham eva anukampartam aham agyana jam tamaha nasyami atmabhavashto jnana dipena bhashvata. That he says, out of compassion for them, meaning referring to devotees who are constantly devoted and worshiping with love, he says, out of compassion for them, I who am dwelling within their heart, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. See, okay, so the problem is ignorance. Ignorance, not just like you don't know some information in a book or something like that. Ignorance of what our eternal relationship is with Krishna. We're in ignorance because we're ignoring the becomes a conditioned soul because they ignore the service of the Lord. And by ignoring the service of the Lord, you know, Krishna Bahir Mukha Boga Vanchakare, how's it called? Nikatashta Mayatare Japati Adade. That the soul, the person, turns his face. Bahir Mukha means turns the face away. Krishna Bahir Mukha. You turn your face away from Krishna. You turn away from the service of the Lord. In other words, you ignore the Lord, and then you become in ignorance by ignoring the service of the Lord. So once you're in ignorance, avidya, you know, then you're in darkness. You're covered over. You're in material consciousness, and you're subject to experience what was being described here. That you're entangled. You're going to work very hard for the sake of very little pleasure. So Krishna explains that out of compassion for the devotees, he destroys with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance, and that's the solution to the problem. And the Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada explains that this, he gives some insight into this. I think it's in chapter, text number 7 in the purport. He says that this avidya is the basis, forms the foundation or the basis for ahankar, false ego. See, so false ego is what's, you know, pushing us on and on. The basis of that is avidya, this ignorance. So that's destroyed by Krishna's mercy. He's within the heart, and when Krishna's pleased by our devotional service, then he can remove that avidya, and then when you're no more avidya, you know, then no more ahankar, no more false ego, no more darkness, then you can engage in devotional service. So that's what the solution is, and that's what the Bhagavatam is meant to do. Bhagavatam is meant to help people get free from ignorance. That the ignorance of who they are, who Krishna is, and what their eternal relationship is with him. It's actually Krishna himself. In the first canto, chapter 3, text 40, there's that verse, Idam Bhagavatam Nama Puranam Brahma Samhitam. It goes on, explains that. And the purport Prabhupada explains that the Bhagavatam is Krishna in a book form. It's Krishna in the form of these instructions. When you read the Bhagavatam, you're associating with Krishna. You're worshiping Krishna. And that is meant to help us get out of the ignorance, you know, that existential ignorance of, or ignorance of what our eternal relationship with Krishna is. It doesn't happen just like that. It's a process, but it happens gradually over time. Nasta prayeshu abhadreshu nicham bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke nash... how's it go? But yeah, right. So, you know, by regularly hearing the Bhagavatam and, you know, serving the pure devotee, one gradually becomes, modes of passion and ignorance gradually becomes destroyed to nil. It's a process. It happens over a period of time if we engage in that process. So that's there. And going back to the point I made earlier, well, see, so sometimes got my train of thought back. Yes, yesterday a devotee commented to me, he felt he was kind of disappointed in the turnout to the Sunday feast. You know, he was thinking, where's our success? You know, where's our success? And I could understand how somebody could, you know, feel like that. But we have to we have to try to see the positive. Okay, so maybe, you know, there wasn't such a big turnout, new guests like that. But Ananda Kirtan, he gave the Sunday feast lecture. He mentioned that it was Prabhupada's, you know, arrival in America last week. And, you know, he came with the Bhagavatams, and Bhagavatams are really important. Anyway, he sold a set of Bhagavatams to somebody, you know, from the Sunday feast guests. And also, even beyond that, and this is on the point of how the Bhagavatam is still happening today, you know, right at this present time. Yesterday, Mahotsa Das in Atlanta, he broke his world record again, you know, for books. He distributed over 4,000 big and maha big books in one day. And that was about the fourth or fifth time he broke the record. That's like incredible. I mean, as skeptical as I could try to be, even if I was trying to be really skeptical about what's going on with the Krishna conscious movement, there's no way I could say that's ordinary. You know, it's like, there's no way I could just sort of write that off as, okay, he's young, he's only 25, he's got tons of energy, and he's talented as a salesperson, that's why he could do so. No, there was something transcendental going on there, and has been for the last year. It's not just that he's young and he's smart and there's something beyond that. So the point is, the reason I'm mentioning that, I'm not trying to push book distribution, please. Don't get me wrong. But, okay, yeah, but the real point I'm trying to make is that things are happening. You know, things are happening in the Krishna conscious movement, but they don't necessarily happen, you know, the way we would like to see them happen, or when and where we want to see them happen, but they're happening. Like, you know, Prabhupada himself said, I've mentioned it many times in classes, but he wrote that letter to Sudama, and he said, when I was alone in your New York, I was thinking, you know, who will listen to me in this horrible, sinful place? And then he says, but at least I could distribute a few of my books. That is something. And the next sentence, this is the big one, he says, but Krishna was all along planning something I could not see. That's a significant sentence. Prabhupada said that. Krishna was all along planning something I could not see. He sent you young boys and girls to me one by one for doing this work of spreading the message of Lord Chaitanya. And he said, now I could see it's a miracle. So the point is that Krishna is still all along doing something we cannot see. You know, Prabhupada said, Krishna was all along doing something I could not see. It's happening now, too. You know, Prabhupada didn't know what was going on, you know, but in retrospect, he could say, you know, when the young boys and girls came after, and 3 years later, he could understand, that was Krishna. At the time, I couldn't understand it. You know, I was just struggling. I was just struggling like anything. But, and later on, he could see, oh, yeah, Krishna had a plan. Krishna was, you know, it wasn't like Krishna wasn't there. Krishna was there all along, and he had a plan. And in due course, and at the right time, that manifested. So we have to have that kind of faith. We have to proceed with that kind of faith in, you know, what's going on. That Krishna's got a plan. Lord Chaitanya's got a plan. Prabhupada, the predecessor acharyas, have a plan. And we just have to, like the very first verse in the Nectar of Instruction, Utsahan Nishchayat Daryat Tat Tat Karma Pavartan. We just have to proceed with enthusiasm and determination and patience. And, you know, in due course of time, that plan will be revealed. That, you know, hopefully we'll be around to see it happen. And, so that's, I guess that's all I have to say. Does anybody have any questions about any of that? Yeah, Ananda Kirtan.
Hare Krishna. We hear that we shouldn't get too close to the spiritual master or too close to the deity because you can become too familiar, and familiarity breeds contempt. Is it possible to apply that saying, or where I don't actually even know where that's at, but I've heard that many times that you shouldn't come close to the spiritual master, too close to the spiritual master. Can that also apply to his instructions? Like if we hear his instructions so many times, then we become like familiarity breeds contempt. So if someone on the Vyasasan stresses his instruction over and over again, maybe one particular instruction, some devotees might feel like agitated, like why is this person always talking about this subject? But actually, you know, it might be the spiritual master was emphasizing that subject a lot. So is it possible to apply that saying to the spiritual master's instructions also?
Well, I think the consciousness you're in has a lot to do with it, because just yesterday, or that wasn't yesterday, yesterday was Sunday. On Saturday, we heard in the verse before this that it said, personality of God, you're also born in the family, and it is wonderful that because of your attempt, the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are becoming newer and newer at every moment. You see? So, you know, Maitreya is glorifying Vidura, and he's saying that, you know, he's asking these questions, and the Bhagavatam is the subject matter, is becoming newer and newer at every moment. And there's a verse in the first canto, it goes, Vayam tu navatripyama yat uttama shloka vikrame yat shrinvatam rasagyanam swadu swadu pade pade. So it's pointing out that, you know, that transcendental subject matter doesn't become hackneyed, like the Hare Krishna mantra. How many times are we chanting Hare Krishna? But if we're in a good consciousness, it doesn't become, like as you said, familiarity breeds contempt. It could become more and more relishable. So it depends on, I think, one's consciousness. Archita Prabhu.
Please find a reference for what you said, because I've never heard Prabhupada say, don't come close to the spiritual master. Only one time, on a morning walk, devotees were, you know, naturally trying to be near to Prabhupada to hear what he was saying. And somebody stepped on his heel, and Prabhupada said, don't come near. In other words, don't come so near that you step on my foot. But the person who did the transcription from that tape, he wrote, don't come here. That was a huge mistake, because Prabhupada didn't say, don't come here. He said, don't come near. In other words, don't come too near so that you step on me. But how can you take shelter of the spiritual master if you don't come close? So what Prabhupada was, the point that's being made is not that you don't come close to the spiritual master. Sometimes it drops out. So one devotee said to Prabhupada, I see the other, my God brothers are so friendly and comfortable with you, but I'm always like a little bit afraid. And Prabhupada said, that's good. He said, that's good. Because you should try never to offend your spiritual master. And if you become too familiar, then you can offend. But closeness, Prabhupada also gave the example of the king and the bug. Both the king and the bug are sitting on the throne, but he said the business of the bug is to bite, and the business of the king is to rule. So you can be close to the spiritual master if you're in the right mood. So one should always feel like a fool in front of the spiritual master. Prabhupada stressed that many times. No matter how intelligent you are, how many degrees you have, you should always feel like a fool in front of your spiritual master. And if you have that mood, then you can be close and you can serve nicely. But if you're thinking that I'm so smart and this and that, and you start challenging the spiritual master, then obviously that's an aparad. So it's not about closeness, it's about the mentality. What mentality do you have? If you have the right mentality, you can be close to the deity, like Sanatana Goswami was carrying his deity around in a bag. You know, how much closer can you get? But his mentality was proper. It's not that he wasn't seeing that the deity is Krishna, but because he's on that platform of pure devotional service to Krishna, then he can be close to him. Whereas, just the opposite, there was one devotee here, one brahmachari, who was imitating that. He was carrying a shalagram shield in a bag everywhere he went. And I warned him. I said, you're getting close to being offensive to this deity. He would take him to the beach. He would take him everywhere he went. And sure enough, after some time, he fell down. Because he was being close in the wrong mood, just imitating great souls. So we shouldn't imitate, we should follow, and we should have the right mentality in relation to the deity and the spiritual master.
Wow, thank you. That's a great comment. Amla Bhakti Maharaj. That was great.
So Achyuta made a lot of wonderful points, and the most important thing is in getting close or near to the spiritual master, whether it's physical or whether it's in distance or whether it's just verbal. The most important thing is, what is your inner mood? What is your inner understanding? And I was just going to take that for a moment. The question was raised by Nantakirtan. Is that true that familiarity breeds contempt? This is that it can and it cannot. And this is the important thing that the devotee has to ask of himself. Familiarity breeds contempt when you're envious of the object of familiarity. When you're thinking, he shouldn't have that quality. He doesn't deserve to have that quality. Or he should be more humble and more like me. When a person is thinking in those terms, then what happens is such familiarity will breed.
Just we could all hear you. Everyone hear you.
Don't worry. Oh yeah, it's fixed. Yeah, I smacked it, so it got scared. Not really. So the idea of familiarity breeding contempt is, as I already said, if you envy the person that you're being familiar with, and when I say envy, I mean that you don't want that person to have that quality because he's outshining you, and you want to be the Lord of all you survey. So if you want that, if you have that motivation, then of course it will bring contempt. But there's another side to that, and that familiarity can also bring a great admiration. If a devotee is not looking to be the Lord of all he surveys, but rather wants to be he wants to be the servant of the Supreme Lord, when he has that mentality, then familiarity will not bring contempt, rather it will bring admiration. In other words, if I think that you're great and I wish to have those qualities because I see you're so happy and I feel your happiness in my heart, if I can feel those things, then that's something great to have. And I don't envy you. I don't wish you didn't have them. I wish you had even more of them. And in wishing that you have more of them, I am very, very grateful that maybe I will have just a little bit of them, and perhaps the person who has them will grace me with his affection and his ability. So the important point is that familiarity breeds contempt only when we are, instead of admiring, we are envying. That's the important point. So if you ask yourself, am I envying him? Is that why I feel such contempt for him? And if the answer is yes, then I should be not envying him. I should be admiring him, and I should see that what he is doing is very much like what the Lord is doing. And in so admiring him, I too will gain those qualities of which I admire.
Thank you. Jai. Yeah, thank you. Believe it or not, I was trying to say that. But thank you. Thank you for those two very enlightened comments. That was really wonderful. Thank you very much. Grantarad Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.